Hi.
Hello.
It is us.
We are back.
And it is not raining. It's sunny and delightful.
What's your local weather?
What is mine? Like I'm doing the David Lynch thing now.
Oh, yeah.
It's beautiful out here.
Oh, sorry. I can't do it.
No, it's hard to do.
This is funny. Yes.
So diving into things, I mean, we have an umbrella of terminology today that is, you know, loosely, you'd say bodily?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Body terms. Body terms, bodily terms.
Yeah, not bodily that leads you to think it's...
No.
But, yeah.
Just like body words.
Stuff.
Yeah, we're not doing well with this one, but it's fine.
It could be knee, it could be...
Once we say the first one, your fears will be allayed.
And it is...
Elbow grease.
Elbow grease.
See, that's not...
That's a body thing.
Yeah, it's a body thing.
See?
Elbow grease, which we use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still pretty popular.
I think so. It's widely recognized. But we use it to mean physical labor.
Yeah.
Right? Would you agree?
Yes. This is another one. Same as 86th. You remember I got fired from that restaurant.
Yeah, you got 86th.
I got 86th. And I also first heard elbow grease working at a restaurant. And... didn't understand, put some elbow grease into it. I'm like, the what? It's confusing. You think, well, I got to squeeze grease out of my elbow. What happens?
Right.
I don't want to squeeze grease out of my elbow.
Well, I'm here to help.
All right.
Hopefully. This phrase was first used in 1672 by English metaphysical poet Andrew Marvell, or Marvell. Two L's. We'll go Marvell.
You never know.
And by 1699, so, you know, 27 years later, the first English dictionary of slang defines elbow grease as a derisive word for sweat.
Oh.
Yeah. The 72 usage is in the poet. He says, two or three brawny fellows in a corner with mere ink and elbow grease do more harm than 100 systematic divines with their sweaty preaching. And he's saying that two or three smart gentlemen with ink and elbow grease, meaning writing, he's referring to elbow grease as meaning writing, can get a message across easier, unhindered, whereas... any speaker could be disrupted by kind of any sort of physical contact or anything like that. It sounds like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could write, you could use elbow grease and ink to get your message across more so unhindered in a way where public speaking, you may be not as free.
And by this time period, they had good punctuation.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the flowy penmanship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
So he's referring to this as kind of direct to elbow grease, meaning moving my elbow with ink, like a writing. I'm writing. Not like writing. He's writing. They're writing.
Well, yeah, like your elbow is a pivot point that is like a machine, and it needs to be greased. Is this right?
I mean, that's kind of what he's referring to, it sounds like to me, yeah.
All right.
That's when we get introduced to it. And then 1672, like I said, by 1699, it has an idiom usage just meaning, sweat, you know, which implies hard work, I guess. Then by 1889, an author uses it in a book of Proverbs called The Salt Cellars. Elbow grease makes the wealth increase, which of course we know is not true. Because, you know, smart tax codes and strong unions and good social programs make the wealth increase.
Ah, look at that.
But he's saying hard work beats out any get rich. Hard work beats out any other get rich quick scheme. You know, that's kind of what he's
referring
to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you just got to put the time and put the effort in. No scheming here. Yeah.
No scheming.
But apparently folks used this term... Or I guess this phrase as a practical joke to haze, like the new guy, if you will. They'd send you out looking for elbow grease to polish furniture or things like that. And you'd know, you'd go out on the mission and come back empty handed, and the people along the way would probably razz you.
Yeah, you got the harassing.
They knew what you were doing.
Right.
Like, we got sent out on Boy Scouts. They'd send you out to look for, like, a left-handed smoke shifter, stuff like that.
Yeah, my early film crews, they sent me for focus
for
spray.
Focus spray. You did say that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you got to go look for some elbow grease. But, yeah, this phrase kind of pops up in other countries as well. The French have a phrase, man, I'm sorry, oil de bras, which translates as elbow grease.
I believe you.
And there's a Danish, nofdet. I'm sorry.
No, that's a good one.
Which translates as knuckle fat, which I like. But yeah, elbow grease, it kind of started as a metaphor for writing and then became a hard work.
Knuckle fat.
Knuckle fat, yeah. Gotta get my knuckle fat going.
Yeah.
So what do you have under our bodily influences?
Well, you're going to be surprised. Or maybe not.
Okay.
I probably already told you, so the surprise element's gone.
Yeah.
I have cold shoulder.
The cold shoulder.
Yes, the cold shoulder.
Nice.
Let me ask you, Ray, how do you use cold shoulder?
I was trying to get someone's attention, perhaps, and they brushed me off, gave me the cold shoulder, or you were trying to engage someone, maybe? Yeah, I was trying to talk to somebody, and they weren't interested, maybe.
Yeah.
Gave me the cold shoulder.
Like most of my dates.
That's not good.
No. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. it's sort of a term that means it sort of snubbed you a little bit, or right? Weren't hospitable.
Right. Yeah, you were trying to be warm, and they perhaps were cold.
Yeah.
To you.
Right.
With their shoulder.
Right. So this one is kind of fun. It's slightly unsatisfying, but not really.
Okay.
That's where I use the word slightly in there.
Slightly.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a funny thing about this. There were plenty of people pointing to this one particular use as first use. However, I found an earlier use.
Yeah, I've come across those before.
And this earlier use really sort of makes you think.
Makes you go,
Before I give you those uses, you might remember in sleep tight idiom that I discovered that there was this story, right, about people would loosen the ropes under the mattress a little at a time on a guest that they wanted to get rid
of,
right?
Sure, overstay their welcome.
And, I like that one a lot. We learned how, like, people who gave tours of these homes and mansions and stuff like that used those stories because they're great.
With lore,
and they're colorful,
yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
But it turned out that wasn't really it.
No.
And this one is similar. This has a similar one, but not really. Okay? But not really.
But not really.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm putting that out there. I'm just putting my neck out there. It's more body parts. Cold shoulder allegedly came about and exists today in that form that loosening the bed ropes does in those scenarios of which I spoke. But it was that an unwelcome house guest, that's the hunk of meat they were given at dinner, was the cold shoulder. And often, I guess, in merry old England, it was mutton. That's what you were served up, which meant, please leave.
Time to go, buddy.
Yeah. Chew on this if you want to, but see you later.
It's been 15 minutes.
Now, here's the funny thing. There are so many people that believe that that is just lore.
Yeah.
And then those same people point to an 1816 original use of the phrase. But I say nay, nay.
You're not pointing to that original use?
I mean, it gets you there, but the original use that I found was earlier yet.
Right.
From 1808. And I'm just going to read you a little bit of it, but it was in the Chester Chronicles, Cheshire. This is July 1808. All right. And it's really like this little exercise poem play on words for hots and colds and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a little piece of it. The restaurateur says he has hot work of his ice house, and the glassblower just released from his furnace complains of the sultry air out of doors. The rich miser looks coldly upon his poor friend, and the inhospitable landlord treats his uninvited visitor to the cold shoulder. So this, again, 1808,
mm-hmm.
someone having fun with this. But in this context, cold shoulder is very cleverly used in a way that could be literal, could be that mutton, and figurative, could be shunned, both. And in the terms of this little poetic piece, it is deemed to be indeed meant to be both of those, because that is the way he's used all of these other colorful flips on hot and cold. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And so I will now move you to the one everyone is a fan of.
Okay.
Not that I'm not, but 1816, Sir Walter Scott's novel, The Antiquary. And here he uses the phrase a couple of times in the book as if to, it's one of those things that we see sometimes, someone establishing it, you know, and even claiming to coin it.
Coin that phrase.
I must tip him the cold shoulder, or he will be pestering me eternally, is one of the uses, which is blatantly just the figurative use of shunning.
Yeah.
You know, you want to duck this person. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, you're stuck with that
snub.
Person. Mm-hmm. And then later in 1823, it's used again in a publication, also in a figurative sense, this snub. And it goes on from there to current day. But I can't help but to go back to that 1808 use that clearly used a word, used it in the way that all his other words had double entendre, and that this word falling into the system of the article would also have had a double meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So while we have no, say, 18th century, 17th century documentation of it being mutton,
right,
I got to put some money on the idea that it was used that way. It did come from somebody serving you a cold hunk of a mutton shoulder, and that it evolved somewhere there, late 18th century.
Yeah,
perhaps that is what I'm going with. That's my story. I'm sticking with
got
it.
Got the literal cold shoulder.
Yeah, and what won't give you the cold shoulder are our ads.
No.
Support Whole Nine Yards and make your life easier with Instacart. Online grocery shopping made simple. Instacart connects you with personal shoppers in your area to shop and deliver groceries from your favorite stores in a single order. Products you love from local stores, hand-selected based on your preferences. Many items may be delivered in as little as an hour. Instacart helps to save you money on your favorite items and recommends new products that you might also love. Instacart, the most convenient way to shop. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by the Roberto Clemente Museum. Located in a restored engine house in Pittsburgh's revitalized Lawrenceville neighborhood, the Clemente Museum is a showcase of the largest exhibited collection of baseball artifacts, works of art, literature, photographs, and memorabilia related to Roberto Clemente and his life in baseball. Shop the store for clothing and other items featuring the iconic 21 logo, and purchase tour tickets for the museum at ClementeMuseum.com. Enter promo code W9Y21 for a 10% discount on hats and tees. That's ClementeMuseum.com, promo code W9Y21. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's bigsciencemusic.com.
All right.
Great
we're
ads.
We're here with
we're
you. Yes.
Back and back and back. So my bodily word.
It's a body word.
Yeah, body word.
Yeah.
We're going with it. Cake eaters.
Uh-huh.
Cake eater slash. Do you know this term? Have you used this term?
Are
you familiar with this term? Okay. What do you...
You know, it kind of means wuss or something like that, yeah. You know, right?
Right. The one use of it is that kind of like... I mean, it's defined as dandy, that kind of,
you know.
But in another,
You know, if you won't pass the car, the truck, you're afraid to pass a truck and I'm behind you, then you're a cake eater. Like, pass the truck. It's not going to fall over on you.
Nice.
Yeah.
There is another usage as well, which that, yes. The other usage is spoiled rich folk. Are you familiar with that?
No.
One as well. Okay. That's interesting because I am familiar with the opposite. I'm familiar with the spoiled rich side of it and not necessarily the you know.
This would be why Marie Antoinette's thing
right.
carried so much weight. She ate the cake.
Right.
They didn't have any cake.
Well, have you seen the 1992 hit movie, The Mighty Ducks?
No. I've never watched this motion picture. No.
That's okay. Well, Emilio Estevez gets pulled over.
You know what?
What?
I think this is more than the first time you've brought this movie
up. It's a part of my
movie.
It is. I mean, it's honestly a part of who I am. It's
okay.
Weird.
Those, sorry.
No, I dig it.
No, let's hear it.
So he gets pulled over, drunk driving. I believe he's a lawyer, had a rough night, gets out there. You know, it's not safe, guys. Don't do it. But as punishment, he has to coach District 5 hockey for community service. It's a ragtag bunch of players that get into all sorts of shenanigans, as one would assume with a kid's hockey movie.
Have we done shenanigans? Okay, sorry,
no,
go ahead.
No, I don't think so. But anyway, during the movie, one of the subplots is, I believe that this rich kid who's really good at hockey gets forced into the district because of what Emilio Estevez does. He's like, well, this guy's really good and our team's not that great, so I'm going to redistrict us and get this kid who's really good into our district. But this kid has, you know, he comes from a upper class neighborhood, and the kids, other kids from the District 5 team, call him a cake eater. And that's the first time I ever heard this term, was preteen Ray. I was 11 years old.
And it didn't mean he was a weak, terrible player.
No, it meant
he was a rich kid.
A rich. And the Urban Dictionary defines this term as a saying from Edina, Minnesota, that people are so rich that they can have their cake and eat it too. So, like, the Mighty Ducks actually, it was shot in Minnesota. It was supposed to be taken place in Minnesota. So the kid's, like, using actual slang against this other kid from what we could assume is Edina, Minnesota. I thought that was fascinating.
Sure.
But that was the first time I ever heard the phrase in referred to, you know, a rich spoiled kid that got somewhere because of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But the hockey definition.
I obviously heard it.
Right.
You know, my older brother called me a cake eater probably. So
in that
as,
is.
Yeah. I did, you know, I was, didn't do something right or I was. Whatever,
right.
Scared to do something.
That's the intended use, I guess. That's basically how it came to be, the phrase. Its first recorded use was from a man who coined lots of phrases. I think we've talked about him before. Thomas Aloysius Dorgan, Tad Dorgan. I'm sure he's come up, American cartoonist. But in a 1918 comic strip of his, he uses the term... cake eater. And the Flapper's Dictionary of 1922 defines it as a wearer of tight clothes, belted coat with spearmint lapels and one button, sausage trousers, low quick fitting collar, greenish pink shirt, and one of those jazz bow ties, if you get what we mean. I love that definition. But another later usage, punctious youth who spent most of his time at tea parties and other places where free food was an offer. But they're implying that same thing. It's a slight against masculinity. Calling someone a cake eater is calling someone a dandy or, you know, kind of a wuss, like you said. And that's that's the literal, like, how it was meant to be used. So that definition is carried through, and it was an idiom that was, you know, defined and used as that.
Go home.
But I had not heard this until I started researching. Like I said, my only interaction was from Mighty Ducks. In hockey, like you hear in around hockey, because, you know, Minnesota's a big hockey town, hockey state.
Right, but wouldn't they use it in hockey in the way that I know it now?
I think because of this.
But the Ducks changed.
Yeah, the Mighty Ducks didn't coin this phrase, but they're saying in Edina, Minnesota. I believe I'm saying that right. Edina, hopefully.
At first, I thought you meant like a diner.
Edina.
Yeah.
In Edina in Minnesota.
That's what I took. I was like, wow. It tries to back to, like
to a single diner.
Like a little booth. You got coffee and a cake eater.
Yeah. No, it's saying that this, yeah, they're using the Marie Antoinette phrase against itself in that sense.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it's not from the literal term of Tad Dorgan's use in his comic strip to mean the foppish dandy. I'm going to say it. I just said it.
Right.
Yeah.
So cake eater.
Cake eater.
Just like that.
I've only known it to mean rich spoiled kids, but now I know it to mean dandy.
Hmm. I'm pleasured by that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to take a second and say, hey, you know how we do.
Yeah.
If people want to give us some ideas, thoughts, comments, suggestions, or relative criticisms, we do that via the Twitter and the Instagram with Whole Nine Yards Pod, where the 9 is a number, Whole Nine Yards Pod, and Whole Nine Yards Podcast, where 9 is a number, Whole Nine Yards Podcast on Facebook.
Yep.
Message us up. And to that end,
yeah.
I thought I'd take a minute today and read a few reviews or some commentary by some people who have checked in with us.
Nice.
Through various forums.
Some more listener thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And I have a Jennifer who says, first off, she seems to be an ex-Pittsburgher or know about Pittsburgh things.
Oh, nice.
And we hail from Pittsburgh, you know?
Hail.
Yeah. She says, has Pittsburgh contributed more to culture than this podcast? Well, thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you so much. I hope so.
Short answer, maybe.
We've got great jazz musicians.
I know. Well, she points out the terrible towel, Andy Warhol.
Oh, yeah.
French fries on a salad. I don't know. Do we really do that?
We exported that to the world.
Good.
You're welcome.
And, but this pot is right up there with spuds and lettuce in holy unison. So, wow, that is very...
Thank you.
Wow. I have one from Mark. He's concise.
Nice.
But we like it.
Sure.
The guys do a great job with their research, and their easygoing rapport makes it an enjoyable listen. Love the theme music.
Oh.
Ah.
Look at that.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
And I have one from Sandy.
Okay.
So many times I've heard these phrases, and in some instances have even researched them myself, but now I won't have to. I hope we get all the ones you were looking to look up.
Same.
I love the format of this and the conversation back and forth, the insight that Jay and Ray offer, and how they go off onto tangents into other words and phrases.
Wow.
We do go off on tangents.
Several tangents.
She noticed.
Yeah, it's hard not to.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. So those are a few reviews. They are very nice ones,
yeah,
too,
very
right?
Nice. Thank you.
But we'll take criticism and et cetera, or, you know, just thoughts. Maybe you want us to explore some word. Hit us up.
Yeah.
And until then, we'll just be sitting here waiting for those. I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
We're not idioms.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyu@wholenineyards.org. That's heyu@whole9yards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.